do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 70. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, sir?
You know, I'm feeling a little stunned. Like, I just rolled back. I've got some type of deja vu feeling, you know, like a snapshot of like, oh, something went wrong. Got to roll back.
I wonder why. Maybe because we just went halfway through this podcast and I didn't hit the record button. So, yeah, I'm ready to jump out of the window. But moving right along, John, I am excited about this one because we have two old friends of the show, dear colleague, Mr. Patrick Dirks, who's the dev manager for Virtual Volumes, and our very own Cody Hosterman from Pure Storage, one of the kings of VVol. So Cody, Patrick, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me here. It's good to be back.
Hey, great to be here.
I just gave you a title, so that should be your new Twitter handle, King of VVols.
King of the VVols.
So my parents call me.
Absolutely. I like that.
We can get a business card printed with that.
The King of VVols.
We're going to go to Burger King afterward and get like a little crown and put some duct tape, masking tape over it and write that.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Well, we are here talking VVols because not only is VVols awesome, Viva Las VVols, but recently Pure announced that they are finally the new kids on the block with VASA certification with their Purity 5.0 on their flash arrays. So we want to talk to you about that today, Cody.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited. In mid-December, we released our Purity 5.0, which is our operating environment for the flash array. And one of the features that was included in that is virtual volume support, which is something that I've been involved in and working on for a long time at more than one company, right? And so I'm really excited to finally be at a company where I've been part of a release of virtual volume. So this has been a pretty exciting couple of weeks for me.
And I got to say, that first swing really hit it out of the park. I think you're one of the first companies to jump straight into VVol with replication support on the first release. So
Skip the first lap.
Well, it's, you know, as much as everyone in storage may think being first is the most important some days, sometimes it's best to have just a complete solid offering.
Yeah. I mean, the replication portion of it was really important. When we were talking to customers a couple of years ago, like, hey, you know, we do VVols. What do you need? What would you like to see with it? What's really important? They're like, hey, we want that array-based replication. Or we're like, well, we'll kick the tires with it, but we really need that array-based replication integration to really go full scale and fully enterprise with it.
So. Oh, yeah. And also, I think, Patrick, and you can attest to this, it seemed like for a while there was this chicken and egg game going on where VVol's customers and VVol's partners, I should say, and VMware were both like waiting for the adoption, you know, like, hey, when is the VVol adoption going to pick up? And it was like, as soon as you guys start doing stuff with your VASA provider. And you know, so there was this game of like, who's first? And I'm happy to say that now in 2018, we're starting to, that's kind of,
we have a chicken and egg.
Now like, we have chicken both. And eggs. Yeah. Chicken and waffles and eggs.
We're not sure where they came from, but we've got them both.
They're all very tasty.
They're all very tasty. So let's talk some VVols in general, but I really want to hear more about the Purity 5.0, because as many of you may know, and if you don't, please go back to previous episodes of VVols where we sort of break down the architecture and sort of what VVols is all about. But you may already know this, every storage partner has a different VASA provider with their own storage capabilities tied to it. So I want to hear what storage capabilities you guys are pushing with your VASA provider.
Yeah, so there's a couple things here, right? So first off is the architecture. Before we get into kind of the actual features, but the architecture of the VASA provider, which is really important, right? How is that VASA provider offered? How is it built? How is it installed? How is it configured? How is it backed up? How is it, you know, recovered? All that kind of stuff. And once again, early conversations with customers, it was a concern for them, right? They wanted VVols. It's really easy to sell someone on the value of VVols.
Yeah.
It's obvious, right? When you learn about what it is. But they didn't want to have to concern themselves with something else, some other manager, some other appliance, some other integration to get things working, right? They wanted less to deal with, not more. And part of that was how the VAS provider is deployed. And there are a couple ways of doing it, right? You can create a VM or, you know, VApp or whatever and deploy it, or you can run it natively on the array, right? And different vendors have chose different options, right? And there are benefits. So you could probably either way, depending on how you look at it. But from a Pure perspective, we looked at it and we really think that running it on the array outweighs any benefits from having it as a VM. And one of the core things, right, is you upgrade the Purity 5.0, right? You upgrade your array. We automatically install a VAS provider on both controllers and they're active, right? So either controller, either VAS provider rather, can take a VASA call, right, from vCenter. And they said there's no installation, no configuration. All you have to do is just register it with vCenter.
That's beautiful. Yeah, no needing to back it up. No need to figure out the compatibility matrix between the VESA provider and the array, you know, operating system or microcode, because they're the same, one and the same.
Exactly. Yeah, the backup and recovery has always been a question around your VAS provider, your VASA configuration, right? And so with the flash rate, just like the other services on the array, right? The GUI, the CLI, the REST, the controllers themselves are stateless, right? Mm-hmm. There's no state or configuration in them. So if you were to lose them and replace them, even with a completely different model of the flash array controllers, you just boot it back up. It's same array, same worldwide name, same IP address, all that stuff. Same thing with VASA, right? If you were to somehow lose both your controllers, right? There go both your VAS providers. How do you restore it? Well, you want to get those controllers back up and running. So you replace them, boot them back up, whatever. And then bam, VAS is ready to go. Because it reads all that state that's stored in with your data, the metadata information, the line ID, all that kind of stuff.
So it re-indexes everything once you put a new one on there.
Exactly, exactly. Okay. Very similar in concept to Site Recovery Manager, right? It just kind of reads the state of the configuration of failover and knows where it left off.
Okay.
Right? Same idea.
Note to self, I'm not going to light both of my controllers on fire and test this, but yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to think that if both your controllers are unavailable, you probably have bigger fish to fry.
That's step number one. Yeah, figuring out how to get
But it certainly doesn't get simpler than that in terms of configuration or setup or maintenance.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the goal. That's the goal, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. The other thing, obviously, for anyone who's in virtual volumes, virtual volumes offloads all of their data services to the array. So I'm assuming Pure is no exception in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. So a big part of vVols is letting the array take advantage of the features that it offers that you paid for, right? But at the granularity of the VM or the virtual disk, depending on what you're trying to do. And so in VASA, you advertise capabilities, and that can be whatever you want from a storage perspective. I mean, literally, you could say, I want my storage to be blue. That could be a capability, right? I don't know what that means, but you'll get the point, right? So on the flash array, we have a variety of different capabilities.
Why wouldn't you want it to be orange?
That's a fair point. FE5000.
I gotta ask again, where did the orange color come from? Was it a bunch of University of Texas or Tennessee grads involved?
So the story behind it is our first kind of marketing employee was choosing a color and they threw all the existing storage companies' logos up on a wall and they were all blue.
Hitachi already had purple, right? And you know,
and there was a few reds out there and things like that.
Yeah, NetApp's blue, EMC was blue. Yeah, no, there's a lot of blue. You're right.
There was a lot of blue, and so they went with orange.
Okay. Blue Arc was blue. Wow, there were a lot of blue.
A lot of blue. Okay,
priority number one, stand out in the crowd.
Exactly.
Sorry, my ADD kicked in. Back to your point, SPVM policy of blue or orange.
Blue or orange, that's a better example. But yeah, so some of them are basic, right? Hey, I just want this VM to always be on a flash array. Right. And so you could actually create a VM storage policy saying, hey, I just want this VM to be on a flash array. And so if it gets storage emotioned elsewhere, it'll be out of compliance with that policy. And that's kind of the cool thing about vVols and VASA is that it's not just about day zero config, right? It's about day two. Like, not only, yes, I want this to be configured this way, I want it to stay that way. And if it doesn't, let me know.
Yeah.
That's actually really powerful. I mean, it's one thing to place it on the right storage to begin with, but with vVols and with SPVM, what the needs of the VM are very explicit in the policy. So you can look at it anytime later and say, not only, hey, is it being met right now, but, you know, why was it that I placed it in the, you know, volume that I did?
That continued compliance. I've told this story 1,000 times. You know, you come as the storage consultant and you're like, why is the database slow? Oh, it's on the backup storage. Why is the backup storage really fast? Oh, it's on the all flash that's being replicated three ways. Like, what's going on here?
What's wrong with this picture?
The point of VASA is to remove the miscommunication between the VMware and the storage app.
Yeah, I like to say, I mean, it brings VMware closer to the storage and it brings storage closer to VMware, right? I mean, at every level, right? You have more insight into your VMs from a storage perspective, and VMware has a lot more insight and control into the storage configuration of itself. Right?
And what about orchestrating that into higher workflows, you know, realize automation and so forth for, you know, exposing that farther out than the VMware admin?
Yeah, so in, I think, 7.3 release of VRO and VRA, right, they introduced, VMware introduced a plugin, right, for storage policy.
Not us, I didn't write the code.
Those guys. I thought Pete did, right now I'm working on writing vRealize Orchestrator workflows for vVols and specifically a lot of replication stuff. We have a VRO plugin for the flash array that's been a lot of fun to build and work around. Customers are enjoying that. But if you look at the APIs available for vVols and replication specifically, there's a lot of really cool stuff. I mean, like, to do a test failover with VMFS and array-based replication, it's hundreds of lines of PowerShell and that kind of stuff. There's literally an API that says test failover start.
Yeah.
Right? You know, well, inside
and,
of it. Right?
And speed too. Because I mean, even with, I know you helped co-write that paper with Cormac on VMFS 6 being a lot faster at resignature. There's just a lot of stuff you have to wait on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole concept of, you know, having to rescan the SCSI bus to see new storage, you don't need that anymore, right? It's done differently with vVol, so you don't have to wait for that. So there's a lot of just kind of provisioning and automation benefits around that. You can have a lot more vVols, right? Because they use subluns instead of direct ones.
No tweaking advanced settings to restrict the number of LUNs you scan for because you know you're not going to go past 64 and you don't have to sit there and wait. Yeah, all the manual hacks we had to do to make that stuff faster and get rid of all of that.
Yeah, I have a slide deck that I present to our customers, and the last slide of it is just like a list of like 40 things that just no longer are concerns or you have to worry about with vVols, right? As compared to, you know, standard VMFS and stuff like that. And I mean, really, when you look at it, especially when you start using it and playing around with vVols, you can see that it was specifically designed to solve problems that people had with storage. Like this, all right, this trade-off, that trade-off, RDMs, thin, thick, all this type of stuff, right? It was designed to remove all those problems that you had, right? The customers had, and those trade-offs they had to make, right? And the more you play around with it, the more you learn about it, the more you use it, the more you, that is definitely evident, right, with how it's built.
Yeah. And really leverage all the money you've spent on these expensive storage arrays and get the most out of them.
So. Exactly. And that's, and that kind of brings us back to the original point, what are the other features inside of the flash provider and so forth. And so, you know, that's one of them. Hey, I want to be on a flash array. Hey, don't. Like, hey, I want it to be on this group of flash arrays. So you can create a VM storage policy saying, as long as it's on one of these two arrays, like I have two in Chicago, right? It's in compliance. If someone moves it somewhere else, it's out of compliance.
Or maybe that one's got DARE to a certain key management for a certain tenant or things like that. Or
exactly. There's a variety of reasons you might want to stick, not maybe to a single array, but a group of arrays or something.
No, that makes sense. Maybe different tenants have different pools and things like that if you're...
Exactly. So there's a lot of use cases around it. And then the other part of that, of course, is the snapshotting and replication portion of vVols and the offloads. And snapshots are the first feature that usually stands out as a huge benefit to customers. That's the first thing they see. They're like, I can do something with this.
Oh, yeah. I feel like there's a soundboard button you're supposed to be pressing right now. So,
but. Right, so, you know, with
snapshots suck.
Go ahead. Oh, there
not no, anymore.
That's totally true. I mean, regardless of what capabilities the array may present, just the fact that snapshots are offloaded to the array and you no longer take a performance hit when you run with a snapshot for a while.
Yeah.
Is huge. It's compelling enough for some customers to adopt vVols right then and there.
Yeah, because you think about it. I mean, like the entire backup industry has built features around getting around the VMware snapshot or keeping them around as little as possible.
Yeah,
right?
Like have special features that, you know, snapshot that hunt them down or features that are like, wait a minute, we need to pulse latency before we do a snap to make sure that we haven't already generated too much from the existing ones. And there's all these kind of fundamentally hacks that shouldn't have to exist if we can just bypass that entire VMFS snap layer.
Exactly. Because of that performance problem, right? Like it's VMware snapshots with like VMFS, right? Have come down to like, oh, I'm about to make a change to my VM. I create a VMware snapshot. I do the change. Okay, it's fine. I delete the snapshot.
It's like an undo button.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's really the main use case other than backup too, right? Well, they'll snapshot it, quiesce it, and then throw backup, but that's where they offload it to array snapshots and all that crazy stuff, right? But with vVols, when you right click on a VM, for instance, or use Power CLI, whatever, and create a snapshot, it offloads it to the array. And so it creates snapshots of the virtual disks, which are volumes on the array. And so you can use array-based snapshots. And this is really beneficial because generally array-based snapshots are efficient, fast, whatever, right? So on the flash array, right, everything's globally deduped, right? It's everything's compressed. Everything's always encrypted on the array, right? Snapshots are just metadata copies. So we can create them instantly, delete them instantly, and restore from them instantly. And so the VMware administrator can now have native granular integration with those array snapshots because of vVols, right? And we can add value on top of that too, right? Because with Vasa policies, I can say, I want this VM to be snapshotted once a day, and I want those snapshots to be cupped around for a month.
Right, right. And you can choose what to replicate as well, right? Well, you can even define, like, if you've got an operating system or if you don't want to, some people will use the example, they don't want to replicate swap files, for example. You know, you can actually have different policies inside of a virtual machine that have whether or not it's going to be snapshotted, whether or not you can replicate it, right? And I'm sure you guys are also doing that.
Yeah, and that's a cool thing, right? Is that like the swap question was always like, should I replicate my swap file? With vVols, right, when you set a policy, even if it's at the entire VM, only the configuration of the VM and the virtual disk will be snapshotted. The swap vVol is always excluded,
yeah,
right?
That's great.
Yeah.
And you know, also, of course, the replication. That's the reason we did Vasa 3, the array-based replication support. So you can set policies inside of vCenter, VM storage policies using our provider saying, I want this VM or this virtual disk to be replicated every 5 minutes. I want snapshots to be kept around for a week, whatever. I want it to be replicated to one of these two arrays. I got two in my DR location. As long as it's going to one of those two, I'm good.
Yeah. Right? I like the whole idea of just pushing that up because I was a lazy storage admin and I was also a lazy VMware admin. Anything I could push back on the people who were making requests fundamentally. So having those workflows tied into vRealize operation or vCloud Direct or vSphere integrated to OpenStack, whatever's consuming SPBM there. At that case, that actual application owner, I can have his templates. They're safe. Maybe I've locked down what he can set, so he can't say do a snap every minute and keep it for 12 years. But I can have some sane defaults, so to speak, across those templates that get pushed out. Or maybe I can even have some templates that have different SPBM policies attached to them, differentiation based off of let them even choose their own, so to speak, in that regard. Push that away so that way you can go back to focusing on the infrastructure and not having to manage all these things at a granular basis. Right.
Not just spend time on it, but just one less thing to mess up on and introduce errors.
Yeah, automation is not always just about speed. It's about consistency because who's got two thumbs and forgets to set up replication?
This guy. Well, Cody, you also, and we just talked about this a moment ago when I wasn't recording. So for the benefit of the audience, we were talking about the fact that I've seen some of your videos that you've done. I've seen you present this at VMworld, but you guys really take advantage of your snapshots as it pertains to vVols for other use cases. You want to share some of those?
Yeah. So this was, in my opinion, one of the least talked about, but most major benefits of vVols is the data mobility portion of it, right? Is that what is a vVol? What's a vVol virtual disk? It's just a volume on the array. It's a block volume that your guest puts some kind of file system on, NTFS, XFS, whatever, right? And so what's a virtual disk? What's a data vVol? Well, it's a block volume with that file system. And so there's no reason you couldn't take a vVol and present it up to even an older version of VMware that doesn't support vVols as an RDM, right? Present it up to a physical server, snapshot it, literally take your VMware managed snapshot, copy it to a new volume and present it somewhere else. Like there's really no reason to prevent that or block that. And that's one of the cool flexible parts of vVols, right? Is that it opens these use cases up. And that's really been pretty, I think, a powerful thought to a lot of customers when they understand that. It's like, well, I can really do a lot of cool stuff with this, right? We had a customer during our beta that they had a Oracle environment that was physical, and that was their production environment. And then they had their dev test was on VMware, right? It was virtual, and they had all these RDMs when they would copy, their database between them using the array, and it was not particularly efficient. It was hard to script, it was slow, right? With vVols, they just took the array-based snapshot of their physical Oracle server, right?
Yeah.
And then they just imported it up in as a vVol, right, to a template, and then they just deployed that template out about 100 times for their engineers to kind of run their tests and work against, right? So there's a lot of really cool flexibility. I put a blog post out about a month ago around I created just basic old Windows 2016 VM on vVols. I snapshotted one of the data vVols, presented it up to my physical UCS server, booted it up. Hey, it's a Windows machine.
Now, can we go the other direction though?
Yeah.
So if I've got my Oracle team, for whatever reason, because Larry needed more yachts, they still are running physical,
yep.
But I've got a test dev environment. And so I could have my production that's running on some, Spark, Beast or something. And then I could make 100, copies of that data set in the virtual environment for my test dev, which maybe I'm doing virtual for test dev in that case.
Yeah, absolutely. There's an API called Import Unmanaged Snapshot, which is a little bit of a misleading name, but it basically takes a volume, creates a kind of a virtual disk, right? But it makes it a vVol, right?
Yeah.
So you can
yeah.
take in a regular volume, make it a vVol, and present it to a VM. So
that's also, you could use that for P to V basically also.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had some cases years ago, I was migrating some very large, it was bare metal Windows clusters, file servers. And rather than P to V the thing, I just basically created a new Windows C drive and then took the old one, moved it to a VRDM, and then later to use the storage data mover to move it in. But you could basically do that same workflow and just go straight to vVol and not have to do any additional conversion or migration.
We had one of our beta customers was a big RDM user for a variety of reasons, right? And one of the things we asked them to test was move from RDM to vVol, test some different options, right?
Sure.
So they did a couple things. They did the import unmanaged, right? So they basically removed the RDM, added it back as a vVol. They did another thing. They literally added a virtual disk, a vVol one, so it creates a volume on the array. They did an array copy from the RDM volume to the vVol, and then they just removed the RDM, bam, ready to go.
Done.
Right?
That's
so there's a lot of really cool ways to get an RDM into a vVol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love hearing things like that because it's cases where people were using RDMs just so that they could apply array side smarts to the data storage that they have and for no other reason. And it's, it's painful. You got to talk to the storage admin. You got to get it set up just so. Those things can all go away with vVols where that's offloaded anyway. And it's great to see that giving the array insight into what the disks are and whatnot enables all these use cases that, we didn't even, think of at the time. I mean, it may be misleadingly named, but, that's what it was and that's what we thought of it. And, the more you can do with it, it's just great.
Well,
so I love it.
For people out there who love RDMs, think of vVols as just RDM 2.0, like an RDM that,
right.
That doesn't suck. So.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier,
teeny,
right?
Tiny RDMs.
vVols were designed to remove these trade-offs, right? So it's basically taking the benefits of RDMs, the benefits of your VMFS. Virtual disks and VMFS and merging them
best
together.
Best of both worlds.
Absolutely. Vival was designed to make things easier and also to rid the world of the pain of LUNS.
LUNS suck.
Right?
Thank you, Ken.
So true.
Now, another big question we get, Cody, when it comes to virtual volumes, a lot of folks are, you know, when they're thinking about why would I go to Vivals, usually the question comes up around stranded space or the ability to reclaim space. And I know Vivals has a lot of really good features on that, but why don't you share some of the experiences you've been having with customers as it pertains to how it's easier to do space reclamation on Vivals as compared to VMFS.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So, I mean, there's, with VMFS, so if we're looking at VMFS 6, right, there's automatic unmap now, right? So if you delete a VM, move a VM off it, ESX will issue unmap down to it to reclaim the space and tell the array, hey, I'm not using these blocks anymore, do with them what you need to, right?
Sure.
Zero it out, remove the metadata, whatever the array does. And it's important to have that enabled and do that so you can have your array efficiently representing what you're actually using, right? But you had to deal with it, right? In the earlier days, it was a script. In VMFS 6, it's an automatic thing, but it's still a thing you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're technically throttling it, you know, at a fixed throttle, I think, so.
Yeah, it's an asynchronous kind of process right now on VMFS 6, but it still exists. With Vivals, when you delete a VM, right, when you delete a virtual disk, what happens? Well, you're deleting that volume, that virtual disk on the array. So there's no need to tell the array that a VM has been deleted because the array already knows, right? That's literally what just happened, that volume, that VM has been removed. And so there's no unmap needed from a data store perspective because that VMFS.
There's no obfuscation of VMFS.
Exactly. So. Exactly. So there's some really cool. I mean, we've had customers that just moved their VMFS VMs onto Vivals and they got capacity back by doing that because they had some stranded data on their VMFS volumes after they deleted it. Right. All they had now was their VMs, not all that other, you know, dead space, if you
sure.
will.
And that's with VMFS, which is actually, if I recall correctly, mildly thin provision friendly. It doesn't, it'll reallocate previously used blocks. It's not like NTFS that'll just go with VSS, go crawl the entire LBA map if you give it the shot.
Yeah, so. It has a good reuse mechanism, so it will reuse space after it's.
But you'll still get space back because people have burst it up and they've burst it down. It's just the nature of it. And so if you combine that and then you combine the guest reclaim capabilities, particularly on the Windows is my favorite example. You turn on VSS, it's always redirecting writes, and you give some DBA, you know, who's got a 10 megabyte database that writes in a circle all day. You give him a terabyte because that's what he asked for it, and suddenly you have a terabyte used on the array, and you're not getting it back anytime soon. So
yeah, I was going to make that same point. I mean, it's not just deleting files at the VMFS level that trigger a reclaim of the whole file. It's also within the file systems that live on those vVols, the VMs themselves can make the unmap calls and they get passed straight through to the array
yeah.
and reclaim the space inside the virtual disk that you have set aside.
Yeah, that in-guest unmap thing is really important. We've had customers that move to a version of VMware that supports in-guest unmap, right?
Yeah.
It's a 6.5. And one customer was a bank. They got 40% of their array back because they had nice. VDI end users that were just throwing all kinds of stuff inside of their Windows machines. And they were deleting it, but, you know, it was still stranded inside of that.
Sparse SE does kind of, yeah, thin. We need to come up with an industry term for this where thin provisioning slowly decays. Do we call it thin provisioning decay or thin provisioning rot? Rot? I kind of like that.
Rot.
Reverse half-life. I don't know exactly what it means. Rot's a good one. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, we got decay, but that sounds like rot makes it sound like something you don't want to have, and unmap is really the cure for that. Yeah. So.
So, I mean, those are one of the topics I have at the end of that PowerPoint presentation where I say, hey, these are things you don't have to worry about anymore, and VMFS unmap is certainly a big one.
Yeah, absolutely. You've done a really good job of blogging on your blog, and we'll leave links on the show notes of this page, but you've done some great deep dives on unmap, but for all vSphere as well. Some of your blog posts, high level architecture stuff for vVols, understanding bindings, understanding snapshots, managing snapshots with Power CLI, and you've also done a lot of work with VRA. I think the way I remember you sharing it with me is you kind of have two totally different use cases for VRA. There's just for one organization or for also cloud environments where you've got multi-tenancy, right? Haven't you built some pure specific workflows that work for vVols?
Yeah. So with vRealize Automation leverages vRealize Orchestrator for it's like anything as a service, XaaS stuff, right?
Yeah.
So you can take VRA workflows and import them quite nicely into VRA and then assign them as kind of a self-service catalog to end users, right? And that was with VMFS even, right? This was a really popular use case where people could give their DBAs the ability to restore from their snapshots, bring up new, but saying, oh yeah, you can only do it to this volume, to this snapshot between 7 and 8 a.m. And, you know, Sally has to approve it, you know, all through this kind of this nice GUI-based wizard.
Go call my external ticketing system and, yeah, request management approval from ServiceNow or something crazy. So.
And it'll take a week.
Exactly. And with VRA, it really, with using VRA workflows, it makes it really simple to do that stuff. And with VRO 7.3 and VRA 7.3, there's some really good storage policy-based management integration. And so these are some of the workflows I'm writing right now with VRO is, running a test failover my VM or assigning storage policies and stuff. And then you can just import that up in as a service or an action item inside of VRA for end users to request as needed within the controls that you want to assign.
I was curious, what is the average you're seeing for thin MMAP across customers? Because I've been talking with our CIP phone home guys, see if we can maybe try to find an average on that. But I'm curious across, I mean, the most egregious example I've ever seen is someone had a petabyte that was missing between the nguest usage and the array.
I've seen one array, it was at 85% full, it dropped down to 18. That was the most extreme. Now, it wasn't a petabyte of space. I think it was like maybe a 300 terabyte array or something like that, but it was a significant amount.
That's a lot of money.
Absolutely.
So they were happy to see it back.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing is I tell customers, this is the reason that I spend sometimes like half of my best practices session when I talk to customers about VMware best practices, talking about Unmax. Like, I don't want you to come, oh my gosh, my array is 90% full, you know, have to go buy new storage, right? No, run on map first, right? If that solves the problem, hey, great. If it doesn't, okay.
Maybe we'll need to make a promotional video for this. We get boxing gloves and like punching out blocks or something. And we just got to make sure people don't call it the next generation of Ddupe or something silly. Like, it needs clever names and clever.
We need some more branding around a lot of the things we're talking about.
I'm sure your sales team really appreciates that.
Thanks, Cody. I get all kinds of gift baskets filled with all kinds of nice gifts.
Nice.
They're happy when customers are happy in the end. So it's all good.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, you guys had a pretty big push recently. There were multiple announcements at the same time. vVols on Purity 5.0 was certainly one of them. What are some of the other announcements you guys have?
Yeah, so some of the things that came out in Purity 5.0 are something we call Active Cluster, which is active-active replication.
Yep.
Right. This was a kind of a core feature of Purity 5.0. It's built in, right? Once, like all our software, we don't license it. So if you have, well, two flash arrays, you get it. Right? And this presents the ability to do something like, you know, vSphere Metro Storage Cluster, right? Stretch clusters and so forth, right? And one of the core benefits of our implementation is that it's super easy to set up. There are three CLI commands, right, to get up and running with active-active storage, right, once you have a volume. And so it's the simplicity of it, once again, has been a huge core part of our architecture around active-active replication.
Okay, so there's no specific hardware required to do active-active other than outside of, like, if you had a traditional array versus going active-active, it's essentially just a configuration change?
Yeah, I mean, we upgraded Purity 5.0. You know, we support it on our FlashArray M, FlashArray X. And the same note, too, is that's the kind of nice thing about Purity is that it's really flexible. It really doesn't have much to do with the hardware, even vVols.
Yeah.
We support vVols back to our FA420, which came out 4 or 5 years ago, right? So our older hardware, right, supports it as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of flexibility around that too. And you know, another thing we did announce too is that we put out a VMware validated design with the FlashArray. So it's using things like the vRealize suite, of course, vSphere,
yep.
NSX, and then the storage underneath it is the FlashArray. So if you want to deploy a VVD based on Pure, right, there's that architecture out there too. And the kind of the last thing I want to mention, right, around is like, you know, what's next for vVols? What's going on? Like, this is going to be a huge year for us. We see a lot of the benefits of vVols. We see a lot of the things that opens up, right? And the mobility is a key part of that. One of the features we announced, it's not quite GA, but we announced it, called Cloud Snap. It's a fancy term for basically taking snapshots and sending them elsewhere, right? NFS, S3, whatever. And so this would give you the ability, right, when we add it into our VOS provider, to create a policy saying, hey, my VMware snapshots or whatever, I want to offload it to NFS. I want to offload it to S3, right, after they're a month old or something like that.
Oh, nice.
To Glacier, right? So you can have long-term retention or moving these your VMware snapshots to the cloud, right, if you want to. So I think there's a lot of cool use cases that the granularity of vVols, what they actually are, right, opens up. And I think that's going to be a fun feature to work around with vVols.
And that's Cloud Snap?
Yeah, we call it Cloud Snap, yep.
So how do I use that with vVols then? What do I have to do?
So when the nice thing about VOS is, right, is to leverage a new feature on the array with vVols, you really just have to add it into our VOS provider, right?
Okay.
To have the VOS understand it, right? And so essentially you can create a Cloud Snap policy. Hey, I want to send this snapshot to S3, you know, after it's a month old, or I want to send it now, or I want to send it to NFS.
And you just set up some buckets on the back end to connect to, or NFS mount points or something.
Exactly. So then from a vVols perspective, you'd be like, hey, my snapshots for this VM, I want to send it to NFS or S3 after they're a month old. You create that VM storage policy, it configures Cloud Snap on the VM and sends it off, right? So that's something, I said, we announced Cloud Snap last year. It's not quite GA, but there's going to be a lot of cool work coming along the lines of Cloud Snap and vVols because of that data mobility, that portability that vVols offers. There's a lot of cool stuff I think we can do with it. And so it's going to be an exciting year for vVols.
And since that'll target NFS and S3, you can order some of these secondary storage vendors in your data center. You could also use them for your vault pointer or secondary.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Whatever the use case, right? You know, long-term retention, dev test, right? Variety of different options you can leverage that with.
Well, that's great. And that's all because the array has total insight into what makes up a virtual disk and can treat each one as you want it.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, initially within Pure, it was a little bit of a hard sell around Vivals. I was like, well, people aren't using it, you know, but once engineering and product management understood some of the use cases that Vivals opens up, it was not a hard sell anymore, right? Once we got to that point. So we're going to be investing quite a bit and adding features over on the array itself, then also adding them into Vivals.
That's great. And the payoff is really immediate.
Yep. Yeah, that's really cool. We will be watching closely and look forward to seeing you at VMworld and also at Pure Accelerate. If you want to learn more about Vivals, you don't even have to be a Pure customer. That's one thing I love about some of the stuff Cody's done. It's not about Pure. It's about Vivals. And so if you want to learn more about Vivals in general or Pure's offering, just go to Cody's website and I'll leave a link, but it's CodyHosterman.com. He's also on Twitter at Cody Hosterman. Not very original, by the way.
I've never been accused of being super original with those kind of things. Sorry.
Yeah, but really, thank you for coming. Patrick, also thank you for joining the Vivals conversation. Hey, you guys are both pleasure. Welcome anytime.
Hey, thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Thanks a lot.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Mr. Patrick Dirks and the newly proclaimed king of Vivals, Mr. Cody Osterman. We'll see you next week, but until then, bye for now.
Lungs suck.
The V will free you, my brother.
Oh, yeah.
I am profoundly dumbfounded.
Woohoo!
God,
I was like, I didn't say anything
flustering.
That interesting.
I'm sweating.
Dude, bastard.
You're 10 minutes in, reset and just
I'm sweating.
Phone. You barely got started.
Okay, but now hit record. Now.
We're recording now. I'm so sorry. Right. I'm so sorry. That
I'll
never
listen to
happened.
The intro music anytime.
He's right. Getting all sweaty and breathy right. On the microphone.
Sure, he said that to the last guest, too.
All right, here we go. Take two.
Enough of this jibber jabber.